start the podcast, could you say a little about the project and its broader aims?
Well, it started off as what we now call EU Kids Online One, because it was a one-off three-year project, and funded by the Safer Internet Programme. The name's changed a little over time, but that's what it's called currently. And this was because after years of discussions between academics and the EC, they made a decision they need to have more of an evidence base for making policy. It had to be grounded in research, which it took a lot of convincing to get there. And so that first project assembled the research from all over Europe, and because we had people who spoke all different language, you could say, and what are the figures for, or what is the result in country X, and they could translate it. And so we could get comparative research of 400 plus studies across Europe at the time. And that was the gist of it. There was, you know, research issues about, well, how do we do this comparative research, and how do we, you know, we've made it available in a database that you can search, it's public. And we followed up on methodological issues, but these were all like asides to the main point about collecting this evidence. And then this was a very successful project in the eyes of the EC. So they put out you bid for another project, and we got the money for a two-year project to do a big survey. So we'd expanded. Originally it was 21 countries. We then went up to 25. And did this huge 25,000 plus survey across Europe, which is the basis of the findings that we've been talking about recently. This is mainly interviewing children, but also one of their parents or guardians, so you can do the comparison of what they say. So that lasted 2 years, and now we're currently in EU Kids Online 3. Again, because the first one was popular, we managed to get... It will be the last instalment because this bit of the EC is disbanding, so we won't get any more money. And this is to follow up what we did in the first two times, you know, analyse the survey more and collect more studies. But this time we've got the qualitative research. That's the new bit. So that's a summary of what we've done and where we are now.
And what did the qualitative research entail for the third?
We're about to go and interview people in 15 countries, or children in 15 countries, in schools, both in focus groups and individually. And the main... You had to narrow it down a little bit. You couldn't cover all the area in the survey. So the main emphases are on what do they think is risky, and also, you know, what do they think of adults' perception of what is risky. I mean, they may not agree. And also, if they do have problems, what are their coping strategies as they deal with it. So those are the two main things we'll be looking at.
And in terms of the findings thus far from the survey... Substantively, what have you found to be true about the online practice of children across Europe?
You'd have to narrow it down. You'd have to, you know, say, do you want to talk about activities, social networking sites, various of the risks we looked at, what parents do? We asked such a broad range of questions, you know.
And they're very diverse findings.
They're very diverse findings. You can't say, like... all the countries around the Mediterranean are like this, or around the Baltic Sea are like that. If you look across table after table after table of findings, there isn't that strong like regional pattern or a pattern based on history of countries, you know, ex-communist countries, or it's more complicated than that. You see little bits, but if you look across enough tables, you say this is really diverse.
Does that heterogeneity pose problems for formulating policy at anything other than the national level?
Well, one of the things we were looking at in this recent report on national perspectives, and the aim of this was you'd have two pages which summarised each country. Now, you can go and look at another country, but really, most people are going to look at their own country. Yeah? And it tells you where we are, high, low, middle, whatever, in relation to the others. So if these countries then put their recommendations at the end of the document, it tends to be based on their particular circumstances. And what you find is the recommendations are prioritised differently in different countries. So, you know, if one country has a particular problem with giving out information easily, or bullying, or excessive use of the internet, that each one of those might be their priority in their country. Or another example is parents obviously don't talk to children about certain issues in some countries more than others. Mm. So encourage implementing communication. Or in another country, you know, there's not many things that are problematic. The problem is the children actually don't use the internet very much. So the policy recommendation then becomes make more effort to get them to use it more. So in each country, you're going to have a different emphases. They may have a certain amount in common, but what becomes top will vary because of their circumstances. And of course, I suppose the message to the EC, which tends to want to do European policy, is you're going to have to be a bit flexible here, because you can see why country A would prioritise this and country B would prioritise that.
And were the particular things you found to be distinctive about children in the United Kingdom?
Yes, I mean, they're scattered all over the place in terms of different parts of our report, if you like. For instance, you know, a lot of our children access the internet through a school, a higher proportion than in many other places. They do it through home as well, but this makes, you know, school quite a strategic place, for instance, to have your internet awareness raising campaigns and safety issues, because that's where they're using it quite a lot. Or, for instance, we are one of the countries that are top for going online via various mobile devices. Nowadays, especially smartphones, but it could be laptops or notepads or whatever. But given it's kids, it's mostly smartphones or just mobile phones. Which means then you've got to think about your parental advice, because you can't, like, say, put it in the centre of the room and look over and see what they're doing. Because we're in a country where they're using it where you can't see that. So the advice you give to parents has to change a little bit. So it just won't work. So that would be a particular example of a country like us. We have a lot of young people, for instance, 9, 10, 11, so on social networking sites. And although there are ones like Club Penguin and so on, which will cater for younger ages, actually we know quite a lot more on Facebook. And that has a 13 years to be on it. So that raises questions that are currently, for instance, being discussed in the EC of do these age limits work? And in some countries they clearly work even less than others, like ours.
To what extent do you think these realities of how children use the internet are understood adequately by people responsible for child protection?
Varies by country. In the UK, I would say, particularly well understood, because we have the longest history of engagement in this area, of safety, of raising safety concerns, for years producing leaflets, running courses, bodies get together, a lot of research and so on. So in a sense, we were a model for some of the other countries. Now, you know, over the years, especially in the western, northern parts of Europe, they've got quite developed as well. But there's other countries where this is only just coming onto the agenda. And this is also reflected in media coverage. You know, because this has been a debate or an issue or something for so long, it has been in the media. When you release something now, it doesn't get into any of the, like, paper media or whatever. This last report was a bit of an exception. I did some interviews for the BBC, but mostly it just appears tucked away online. In a country that hasn't covered it very much, an example would be Slovenia or Portugal, when they have something to report, they get an awful lot of news coverage because it's new. It's new news for them. So it's visibility in the media is different because of that history of institutions and history of coverage.
And why do you think Britain was at the forefront to that extent?
I think we've just had a long history of wanting to protect children. If you think of child poverty, an issue 100 years ago, and we've not only got a history in our government, in the fact that you have social policy and social admin departments here, but we have a wealth of non-governmental organisations involved here. Now, some countries, I'm not going to go into it, have very little non-governmental organisational work. It becomes more the state. And because we've got that collection of bodies, that, you know, they could get together and work jointly from a very early stage.
But the prominence the issue has enjoyed in the public consciousness is now threatened by oversaturation, perhaps.
Well, it doesn't get into the news now, but in the statistics you get the impression that over this years of putting out the message, a lot of big parents have become aware of issues, as exemplified in, you know, their behaviour. They're saying to their children, like, don't give out your address and telephone number online, or something like this, or be careful what pictures you put up, or, you know, because the message has got through. It may have taken years, but
there is success.
Yes, but there is success and willingness to say, you know, do you know where the buttons are to report problems on websites, you know, or do you know that one exists? These type of things, and, you know, are you, as has been recommended, talking to your children a lot about the internet? And it's quite clear, for instance, you may think, if I as a parent don't know much about it, I'm not going to talk to my child. And that's not the case. If you look at the figures, you think a lot of parents here who don't use the internet much themselves are still able to say, and what are you doing? Can you explain it to me, even though I can't go and look and see for myself?
Thanks very much for your time.